Even silent movie buffs have a hard time keeping track of what was happening in the early years of the 20th century. They may recognize the big names like Edison, Biograph, D.W. Griffith, but know little about the scores of studios and production companies that proliferated in the New York metropolitan area. One of the more interesting was Thanhouser, located in New Rochelle and founded by Gertrude and Edwin Thanhouser. Several of the company's films will be screened tonight at 7 at the Museum of Modern Art, and on October 28th,
Wednesday,
at 7:30 at the Museum of Arts and Culture in New Rochelle, they'll be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Thanhouser Film Company. I'm delighted that all of that brings Edwin W. Thanhouser to our show today to discuss his grandparents' films. Hi.
Great, Leonard. Thanks a lot for having me.
First, tell us a little about your grandfather, Edwin Thanhouser. Didn't he begin as an actor?
He did. Edwin and his wife Gertrude were both from a theatrical background. In the 1890s, Edwin and Gertrude were both on the stage, both across the country as doing theater, and then they decided to go into the theatrical management business and opened up in the Midwest in Milwaukee a theater company where they would put on plays on a regular basis.
A lot of actors, when films came along, saw this as the beginning of the end.
Yes, they did. In fact, it was still hard to get them to work for the moving picture companies. The theatrical performers were already kind of a second-class citizen, and many of them, when they were approached by moving picture companies, said, "I haven't stooped that low yet." So acting in the movies was kind of a step down for them.
So how did he wind up getting into the movies, or they get into the movies?
Well, what happened was is that in the 1909 time frame, they saw their box office receipts from their live performances decline. And they found out by doing research, of course, that this newfangled technology called motion pictures were taking away their customers. One of the reasons, of course, was is that in the theatrical world, people would show up on an unreliable basis, and you have to pay them for every performance, assuming they showed up sober. So when you were able to capture the performance once and then repeat it many times, it was very lucrative.
In the early films are mostly novelty things, but perhaps because it was founded by actors, Thanhouser Films seemed to pay more attention to performing.
Yeah. One of the things that makes Edwin and Gertrude's entry into the field unique is they were the first to head a motion picture studio in the United States that had a background in the theatrical arts and the management of theatrical endeavors. Everybody else before them was involved in the technology or the business of making and distributing films.
Now, there are some famous names associated with the studio. Probably the most famous was James Cruise, who would later direct The Covered Wagon.
Right.
Who else?
The most famous actress with Thanhouser was a woman named Florence Labadie. She used to work for Biograph, which, of course, was one of the most well-known companies of the era. Edwin hired her away in 1911, and she was with Thanhouser through 1917 as the star of many, many of the Thanhouser films. She was a heroine. She would do all of her stunts. She was part of what in that era would be called the modern woman. This new era out of the Victorian age into the Progressive age. So she was just a marvelous actress and was very popular in public polls. But tragically, she died in 1917 from an automobile accident. So her career was cut short, and we'll never know what could have been.
And that was an automobile accident that had nothing to do with filming. She wasn't
Correct.
Doing one of her stunts.
Correct.
There was also Marie Eline, was it?
Marie Eline.
Eline.
Eline
she was
yeah.
called the Thanhouser Kid.
Right, the Thanhouser Kid. Thanhouser had a whole bunch of child actors and actresses, which was very popular with families. Marie Eline played the role of a young boy many times. One of the films that is most famous from Thanhouser is called The Evidence of the Film, which is a crime drama that has film as part of the plot device to advance things. And Marie Eline in that film, as a young girl, actually plays a young messenger boy in the film. So that was pretty common practice in those days.
Who was writing these scripts?
Gertrude's brother-in-law, Lloyd Lonergan, who founded the company with Edwin and Gertrude, he was the other third, was the most prolific writer of the time. Of the 1,000 films that Thanhouser made, he probably wrote on the order of 800.
Wow. Why did they decide to locate in New Rochelle?
Well, it was by happenstance. When Edwin was doing his Midwest business in Chicago and Milwaukee, he was going to move to New York, which was the center of talent, and Edison was across the river in New Jersey doing his innovations.
And there were other people in Astoria, Queens.
And there were other
Queens,
people, exactly.
And there was Fort Lee as well.
Well, New Rochelle, 45 minutes from Broadway, made famous by George M. Cohan, of course, was the fashionable place for actors and actresses to live. So Edwin went to New Rochelle to find housing for his family, figuring that would be the place to live. And the real estate man that met him at the train asked him what his business was. He said, oh, my business is going to be motion pictures, and I'm looking for a studio in New York. And he said, well, what do you need? And he said, I need a big space. And the space that happened to be available was a abandoned roller skating rink. And Edwin liked it, and the rest is history.
Although it also became part of film history because that roller skating rink burnt down, and that became a movie.
January 13th, 1913, for causes we're not sure of, the studio caught fire. And one of the problems in that era is that all the films were made of nitrate material. Nitrate, of course, is very flammable. It went out of favor in the world in the 1950s when safety film came in. But before safety film, when Thanhouser was in business, it had nitrate film, which would fuel itself when it burned. And so the studio, for some reason, caught fire, and the entire studio burned to the ground in one day, made nationwide headlines.
And then they decided to just make a film out of it?
Well, what happened was, since it made the nationwide headlines, they decided, well, let's capitalize on this. So they made a film called When the Studio Burns.
But they had been filming the burning of the studio, I assume.
No, they hadn't. When the studio actually burned down, there was no motion picture of it. Hmm. There's a couple of still photographs that we have of the film completely engulfed, but they had to recreate that scene. So there's some film that they made when the studio burned, has a lot of smoke in it.
My guest is Ned Thanhouser, who's grandson of Edwin W. Thanhouser, talking about the centennial of Thanhouser Films. He'll be speaking at a screening tonight at the Museum of Modern Art at 7 p.m. The film will be shown with piano accompaniment by Ben Model, and we'll go through some of the other things that you're doing. Of course, people can always find out all of the information on our show page at WNYC.org. We're talking about creating a film studio at a time of great artistic growth in film. This is when close-ups and dolly shots and all sorts of other things are being developed, more serious plot lines,
right.
Complicated ones,
right.
Longer films.
Right. When this era began, when Thanhouser got into the films in the 1909, it was the end of what scholars today refer to as the primitive era. Primitive era would be short films that would run a couple of minutes and would just show one scene, like one of the most famous ones is a train approaching the station. And in the early days, when film was a novelty, people would see the train approaching the station, they would get out of their chairs. They thought they were going to get run over. But after a while, people got used to that, and they started developing a script, and they would splice together different scenes to make a coherent narrative. And that became one reel of film, 1,000 feet, that was then distributed. Now, Edison and his crew kind of standardized the 1,000-foot, or what we call today the one-reeler. By the end of Thanhouser's era in 1917, feature films, that is a film that ran more than four reels, was becoming the standard, and the majority of films were feature films. So this era between the primitive and the feature film is what we call today the transitional era in film.
D.W. Griffith was one of the great pioneers in going to four-reelers.
Correct.
But he didn't work for Thanhouser.
He was a consultant, though. There were times when he was a consultant. Thanhouser was purchased in 1912 by Mutual Film Corporation, and Griffith was on the payroll with Mutual at that time, and he was a consultant to Thanhouser.
There were slapstick comedies, short romances, also literary adaptations. David Copperfield, Silas Marner, serials.
Yes.
Were they pioneers in the serials?
Well, they saw The Perils of Pauline that came out in April of 1914 as a successful endeavor. And so Charles Hite, who was leading the charge to buy Thanhouser out with Mutual, decided to do The Million Dollar Mystery in 1914. That came out in August. And The Million Dollar Mystery was 23 episodes that were all cliffhanger endings, so I had to come back and see the next one. And it made $1 million for the company.
Why did your grandfather sell the studio in 1912?
Well, they had put in a $10,000 investment between Edwin and Gertrude and Lloyd Lonergan. And Mutual was looking for more titles to come into their production companies. And so Anheuser had a very good reputation for quality, production values, good cinematography. And they offered Edwin Gertrude and Lloyd Lonergan $250,000 on their $10,000 investment. So they had made the brass ring, and they took it.
And they didn't go into the industry with another company?
Well, as I understand it, they had a no-compete clause, so they couldn't go back in for a while. So Edwin and Gertrude took their family, my father and my aunt, went to Europe for an extended vacation, supposedly to go investigate the European film and technology, what was going on there.
And Charles Height really is a key figure in this.
Charles Height was a very key figure. He came in and added all sorts of new innovations, such as the Million Dollar Mystery. He was also one to change the marketing efforts of the company. When the company first came out, everything you saw just said Thanhouser as a title. All the movie posters, all the advertisements, no credit to the stars. The stars, again, were second rated in terms of what their importance was. But the viewing public became more and more interested in who was in the movie rather than who made the movie. Therefore, the stars became more important. And one of the things Charles Height did was start embracing what we now call the star system.
But there were problems. Tragedy seemed to dog the studio. We talked about the catastrophic fire. And then what happened to Height?
Well, in 1914, after attending a dinner in his new roadster, obviously gleaned from his largesse of running this company, he ran off a viaduct on the way back. The car overturned, and he was taken to the hospital, and he died the next day of his injuries.
So the studio lost its biggest star.
Yep.
To a car accident, and then its new director.
Well, it did. It lost direction. So this happened in August of 1914, and the studio was run by a committee that knew nothing about how to run movies. And for the next several months, the talent started leaving the company, was directionless. We have quotes of some of the stars that said, I'm going to go someplace else.
How did Thanhouser compare to other studios at the time?
Well, I think the thing they were really well known for was the quality of their productions. Both cinematography was great. They had to rent cameras from other parties that weren't in violation of Edison's patents, mm-hmm. but they got very good equipment. They had a whole stable of how to tell a story, how to costume the story, how to dress the set. Mise-en-scene is the term that's used. So they had excellent production values, and that really differentiated them in the market.
Did you know your grandfather?
I visited him in 1956, shortly before he died. All I remember is he was living in a Manhattan Fifth Avenue apartment, and the only recollection I have is of the door to his apartment. So unfortunately, I don't have any firsthand recollections of him.
One of the problems with the old films is that so many of them have disappeared.
Yes.
How many of the Thanhousers have survived?
Well, you're right. These early films in this era, if you find more than 10% from any one production company, you're doing well. So that Thanhouser made 1,000. So far, we found 198 titles. So we're almost at 20% surviving titles now, which is pretty phenomenal.
And I'm sure new ones pop up every once in a while.
Well, every once in a while they do. The best story comes from the evidence of the film. There was a company that was decommissioning a movie house in Superior, Wisconsin. And as they were taking out the projectors, they saw a can of film in the corner. They opened up the can of film, they held it up to the light, and they saw the words Thanhouser between the perfs, which is how they identified their film, got on the internet, typed in Thanhouser, found me, and now that film has become one of the most famous films from Thanhouser's production.
What are you showing tonight at MoMA?
We'll be showing films exclusively from the collection of the Museum of Modern Art. Trying to remember some of the films.
Get Rich Quick, the big one, Pasha's Daughter.
Yeah, Pasha's Daughter is great.
Her Nephew's from Labrador?
Yes.
That's a wonderful title. The Marble Heart, Shep's Race with Death, A Dog's Love. So these films are all one-reelers.
They are, all of them except Marble Heart, which is a two-reeler.
And then New Rochelle?
New
the 100th
Rochelle.
Anniversary?
Yes. On Wednesday, we're going up to New Rochelle to do a repeat visit. We were up there a couple of years ago. We worked with Teresa Leghorn from the Museum of Arts and Culture in New Rochelle, and we said, let's do a 100th anniversary celebration. So that'll be fun as well.
You're also doing DVDs?
That's right. We have now, of the 200, almost 200 films that have survived, we've digitally processed 56 of those and put them onto DVD that are available from the Thanhouser website.
Ned Thanhouser is going to be at a screening tonight at the Museum of Modern Art at 7 p.m. with piano accompanied by Ben Modell. He'll be speaking Wednesday at the Museum of Arts and Culture in New Rochelle at 7:30. We have more information about both of those things on our show page at WNYC.org. And Ben Modell will be accompanying those
well.
And he accompanies the DVDs that you're doing?
Right. He did a marvelous job accompanying all 18 of the films on the latest release.
Well, you have 190. Are all of them worth re-releasing?
Well, some of them are fragments or reel two of two. So, you know, they're not all complete. So we've tried to pick the ones that are the best that have a beginning and end. You can follow the storyline.
Do you have any favorites?
I think a couple of them. I think The Evidence of the Film, from a historical point of view, is a favorite, and A Dog's Love is a classic fantasy tale about the love between a young girl, played by the Thanhouser kidlet, Helen Badgley, and her dog, Shep.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. I've been talking to Ned Thanhouser, who is the grandson of the founders of Thanhouser, Gertrude and Edwin Thanhouser, actually same name.
Yes.
And it's been a pleasure talking with you today.
Thanks very much, Leonard. I appreciate it.
And here's a little Ben Modell.